Hi, I'm Martha Willett Lewis, and this is the February edition of Live Culture, and I'm pleased to have today as my guest Ellen Hackel-Fagan from Odetta Gallery. Ellen, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to turn you up because I can barely hear you. Can you talk again?
Sure.
That's great. That's great. So, Ellen, you are the owner and an artist, but also a gallerist who runs Odetta Gallery in Bushwick. And we've had you on the show before in 2015. So it's been quite a while.
Nice to be back.
Yeah, no, it's good to catch up with you again. And I wanted to catch up with you again, partly because the situation with New York galleries is changing so much, but also because you have expanded and changed. You're now in two venues, is that right?
Yes. I'm now in Chelsea in the Terminal Market, and I'm still in Bushwick.
Mm-hmm. And why are you in two different venues? That seems like an awful lot, and it's sounds totally exhausting to me to be both an artist and a gallerist and running two galleries. That's amazing. You make me feel really lazy.
I don't know. I'm a glutton for punishment. I think most artists are masochists somewhere deep down.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We create our own work and our own projects.
We do. So I'm just following in suit with the personality type. And the real reason is that I am downsizing. Mm-hmm. And I had been seeking a partner to enable me to continue to sustain the gallery. And it was difficult to find a partner to help run the gallery because rents are so high.
And who did you find?
I found First Dibs, and First Dibs is my online marketplace, and they're opening, or they just opened, a flagship store in Chelsea, and I'm getting in on the ground floor as one of only five contemporary art galleries on this floor at the Terminal Markets.
And that is such a beautiful building. For people who don't know it, it's this beautiful old brick warehouse, and you're sort of off of this space that they call the tunnel.
I'm in the tunnel.
You're building. In the tunnel.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's gorgeous.
It is the tunnel building. So if you went to that nightclub,
mm-hmm.
you know, you know the tunnel.
I do indeed.
So anyway, it's now, it's had galleries on its floor in the past. But mm-hmm. we're on the seventh floor.
Oh, okay.
The galleries just opened last Tuesday. So this is a brand new venture for First Dibs, which, if people don't know First Dibs, they're an online marketplace for art and antiques and estate items.
Is it an auction?
Furniture. Nope.
Okay.
It sounds like
it's going to be because it's First Dibs.
Yeah.
So you describe on the website that you were moving from, or that you have now, a white cube space, which would be Odetta in Bushwick, and a black cube space, which is the one in Chelsea. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, if you haven't made it to Odetta in Bushwick, please hurry and mm-hmm. get there. It's gorgeous.
It is a treat. It's really beautiful.
It is a light-filled space. I've been fortunate to be able to curate with that space. I designed the space, did the build-out, and for a painter or a large-scale sculptor, they walk in and immediately see their work going on those walls, mm-hmm. especially the larger scale. So I've had a blast there, and my studio's in the back of that space, so it's a combination again to mitigate high rent.
Right.
So the First Dibs floor, the seventh floor in the Terminal Market building, aka the tunnel building, that's 269 West 11th Avenue, New York, right off of Hudson Yards.
Fantastic location.
And just at the top of the High Line. So So it's one of the fastest developing neighborhoods on Manhattan right now. It's pretty incredible, the architectural, iconic statements that are being made all around that area. Large skyscrapers going up. It's pretty fascinating that...
Yeah, it's changing so fast.
Yeah.
So that there's so anyway, a performance space called The Shed there that looks pretty exciting, too.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
I mean, everything is happening there.
It's amazing.
I'm amazed that I got to be in this neighborhood at a rent that is half what I'm paying in Bushwick.
So, Ellen, I'm really impressed by your business acumen. You know, you're a practicing artist. You start a gallery, and you start a gallery not just like some little shoebox somewhere. You start Odetta in the best part of Bushwick, in this beautiful building that you design the interior of, and it's this light-filled, wonderful space, and then you move from that to another space that sounds equally fabulous but quite different. I mean, it's really, I'm quite impressed by that. I can't even imagine doing that personally, and I think a lot of artists have would be daunted by that. Did you do business training, or do you have, what did you do before this? Were you, how do you know what to do? How do you know what to do?
You know, I don't know what to do.
Okay.
I jump. That's mm-hmm. the way I operate. I jump and I try it out. I have, as a working artist, been running a home-based or studio-based business since 1982. I've
right.
always claimed my expenses, my income, and tried to conduct my profession as a business. So I had some background with understanding certain basic accounting regimens that one must follow. And prior to that, I ran a home office for an educational publisher mm-hmm. and covered the state of Connecticut. So that was my day job for many years, and it was great training for selling and for organizing a home office. So
right.
And learning how to make presentations. So a lot of those kinds of skills are skills that I try to offer other artists that I'm showing a chance to exercise.
To kind of pay it forward.
Artist talks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Artist talks. Public speaking, just to also even the inventory management for their online marketplace with me, and the labeling of their images and their organizing of their information to gear up for an exhibition. They, I ask them to get it all together, and they do.
They
and
do, but it might
really
be at some. It's difficult for a lot of artists to do that, though. I speak from experience here.
I understand, but if you're motivated to get your work shown in a certain space, you'll do it.
Absolutely.
You'll do what's required.
Absolutely.
So that's part
yeah.
of the beauty of having opened in Bushwick, is I met a lot of really motivated people.
Mm-hmm.
And that spurred me along.
That's fantastic. And so tell us a little bit about, you have a show called Bebop that's in the new space that's two artists, and then you have a larger group show in Bushwick. So if people
yes.
came to Bushwick, what would they see now?
Right now, they would see a very minimal installation of three artist sculptors. They sort of bridge sculpture and painting in the case of two artists. And that exhibition is called Falling Into Place.
Mm-hmm.
This is the last weekend. It's Daniel G. Hill and Norma Marquez Orozco and Mary Shaliro. Beautiful installation. I'm very, very happy with that. One of the things I try to do there is give work room to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a fine example of that kind of light touch that gives the artwork its due, really. And then back to the black box idea in Chelsea, the new space is in the dark charcoal walled area of vendors.
Mm-hmm.
There's 54 vendors on that floor. However, 27,000 square feet. I get about 200 square feet, and I'm one of only five contemporary art galleries, and there's only two of us based in New York. So this means that when a designer or an architect is looking at objects to place in their interiors, they're going to see some contemporary artwork, and ideally they're going to see that Odetta Gallery has local artists that are being sourced, that are making work right now, all original, and it's on those walls for them to consider for their clients.
Fantastic.
So I'm very excited by that kind of a focused viewer coming in, working for other entities in order to place artwork. And I do think that curators and museum directors and professionals will also walk those floors because there's a lot to see there and it's centrally located. So and you're going to close White Box Bushwick at the end of April. And that is going to be very bittersweet. I've loved that space.
That space you've had so many fabulous exhibits and events there. You know, I can understand that.
It's been a vertical learning curve. I like it very much.
So was it always, I remember you saying something about having a 5-year lease there. And is it just that the lease is just up and it's time to shift things over?
Yeah, there's been a few things. I think people are somewhat aware that there's an L train that services that neighborhood. And it's going to undergo major construction repairs from actually Hurricane Sandy. And that's going to
disrupt everything.
It's going to start at the end of April. Mm-hmm. And so it coincided with my lease's maturation. And I decided without a partner helping me shoulder the rent out there, it was just too much financial drain to weather the downturn of the L train.
Right, which is going to be, I think, significant. I think it's going to be significant. Yeah. I know that some people moved apartments because of this, because of how difficult it was going to be getting back and forth from work. It's going to have massive consequences, I believe. So
the news is that Cuomo was able to get the city to not close the L train during the work week, only on weekends. And unfortunately for the Bushwick Gallery world, that's our open hours. We got a little toehold on the Friday, Saturday, Sunday hours. And so gallerists are going to need to change that. Maybe they'll go to Wednesday to Saturday or Wednesday to Friday. I don't know.
Perhaps stay open in the evenings. And also, as I understand it, you are engaged in going to a variety of art fairs too, which I understand can be quite costly. So downsizing and then prepping for art fairs must make quite a bit of financial sense as well.
It's a step in that direction. I think that having curated the large space for 5 years, I met hundreds of artists and really got to know their work well. So if you're talking about data mining, I've got the data now. And it's wonderful. I mean, this kind of information can only help artists and me move shows around the area, whether it's an art fair or an exchange of a space across, you know, oceans. I mean, the my world as a gallerist, artist, I hope becomes something that's very fluid and isn't locked into one location any longer.
Right. That seems like a more contemporary approach. I just want to say that you are listening to WPKN 89.5 FM and streaming at WPKN.org. And I'm this is Live Culture. I'm your host, Martha Willett Lewis, and I'm in conversation on the phone with Ellen Hackel Fagan, who is talking to me from Bushwick in Brooklyn at her gallery Odetta, and she is opening up a new gallery, which is also Odetta, which will be in Chelsea. And it's a kind of segue because the Bushwick Gallery will be closing. Ellen, when you and I were talking on the phone a couple of days ago, or actually it was yesterday, but it feels like longer, we talked about you being an artist and how the gallery is kind of an extension of that. I was wondering if we could talk about that on the air a little bit, because I think that's really interesting, how you curate.
Yeah, well, like you, Martha, mm-hmm. I've been painting for decades. I've been
right.
painting, drawing, mm-hmm. installations, lectures, teaching, mentoring, you know, all of the above.
Right.
So my studio practice is something that I'm painting with my ears as well as my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I come from a background of having enjoyed ballet, classical ballet, and then into dance for the bulk of my life. So when I think about creating an exhibition or a painting, it springs from my gut. It's not necessarily a very intellectual kind of an exercise. And so I compose as if I'm choreographing. And that energy or vision, that total body view, moves out into larger spaces like a gallery,
mm-hmm.
and the conversation expands. And so I end up thinking about ideas for exhibitions based on my own personal interests, the conversations I'm having basically with myself in the studio.
Right.
And so I look for other people in that conversation, and then the exhibitions evolve into selecting artists that their works really exemplify and broaden this germ of an idea. And as it moves into a more public setting, these artists oftentimes end up meeting for the first time at Odetta, because I know people from Connecticut to Harlem to mm-hmm. Indiana to the South and New York.
Even so Indiana?
People, yeah, I mean, I'm from the Midwest, so I mean, I'm aware of artwork in mm-hmm. all of these places that I've lived and the artists that are making that work, so it can create a nice broad set of life experiences that mm-hmm. these artists then come together, because their conceptual practice is very closely tied. And that then the work gets into the space and gets installed, and artists realize that this idea is embodied in a fresh way through another artist's hands, and they become very good friends. It's been really, I always joke and say I'm going to be a Yenta for artists when I'm all done.
That's a lovely ambition, and I liked the fact that you talk about it being a conversation, because I, too, when I curate, I think about it being kind of a visual conversation, and the fact that, you know, you make a piece of art and it's somewhat done when you finish the actual making process, but it's not done because when you put it into different contexts, different architectural spaces, or in juxtaposition with other artworks, it has another life. And then when there are people interacting with it, that's a whole nother life there as well. But the visual conversation idea is lovely.
The shape of Odetta Bushwick is that you walk in and there's a lot of light, but it's a square, almost a cube space,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a narrow alcove that has a side light over it. And so the light in the space forces the eye to go into a circular pattern instinctively.
Mm-hmm.
The embodied experience of viewing art. And so when the works are finally in situ, they actually talk to each other. They sing. As soon as it's set right, I always think of it as a song. It's
it is visual singing, isn't
song.
It?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the light at Odetta was one of its most striking features. And
I know.
It's so wonderful with color. But I think in the new space, you are going to be using artificial light more. as I understand it.
I'm in the tunnel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're in the tunnel.
So it's dark walls, but it's dramatic.
Right. But it's a different set of circumstances, which gives you a sort of fresh set of constraints to work with, which must be kind of exhilarating.
It will be. And it provides me with their staff. Mm-hmm. When I get on to the seventh floor, and if you go to the seventh floor, you're going to be greeted by professional staffing, and these people will help you should you choose to have a purchase made or if mm-hmm. you have a question about anything.
Fantastic.
I don't have to pay extra for the staffing,
mm-hmm.
and so this frees me up quite a bit. But if a client wants me to meet them there or even present some more work to them there, I have the ability to do that. And I also hope to bring the same type of programming that I've been doing in Bushwick into that new space in Chelsea. I think it'll, as it did in Bushwick, it'll encourage audience. The First Dibs Gallery space will still have Odetta Gallery in it. I'm mm-hmm. a gallery within their space, so you can go in and ask for Odetta.
And there you are. And the show right now, Bebop, has two artists, and I was hoping you could talk a little bit about what that exhibit is and what it looks like.
That is Nancy Baker mm-hmm. and Richard Botwin. Richard does more Bauhaus-inspired wooden sculptures with inset panels of color. And Nancy, in contrast, does works on paper that are a filigree of cut paper and digital printing, oftentimes with themes in this particular show to do with consumerism.
Mm-hmm.
So the two of them are in contrast materially with one another, and I felt that was akin to Bebop call and response performance. So
nice. You oftentimes have a kind of musical relationship. You just spoke of the works visually singing, and this is another musical reference. That seems like a common thread in your work.
It is. Yeah.
So can you give us the addresses? Can you give us the addresses and the websites again for people who are interested? Please.
Website still www.odettagallery.com, mm-hmm. and that's for any space. You'll start to see that it identifies two locations
and
satellite projects like Spring Break Art Fair coming up.
Mm-hmm.
The address is Bushwick, 231 Cook Street, and that's Brooklyn, New York, 11206. And the new address for the Chelsea location, 269 11th Avenue, 7th floor, New York, New York, 10001.
That's so great. So these are free and open to the public, and I urge people who are in the area and feel like they have the desire to go see some art, to go look at Odetta before it closes its Bushwick location, just because it is a light-filled, beautiful space.
The next show up will be my mentor, mm-hmm. Ann Chernow.
Oh, fantastic.
In an exhibition that'll open March 15th
mm-hmm.
Called Femme Fatale. That's my final exhibition in Odetta Bushwick. Actually, between that, I meant to say, though, that the next show is the UConn MFA students are coming in for Armory Week.
Oh, terrific.
We open their show next Friday, March 1st, and it's titled Body Hobbies for Artists.
Body Hobbies for Artists. Okay.
No, for artists. There's 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh, I see. Okay. Artists. Sorry. Yes. Yes. So this is all very exciting, and you're going to be in Spring Break. Are you doing any other art fairs, or what's happening for Spring Break? That's one of the more interesting art fairs.
Yeah, it's just a wonderful situation there. They got the 566 UN Plaza
mm-hmm.
for their site. And
that's glamorous.
So we're in a government building. The exhibition theme for Spring Break this year is
fact and fiction. Mm-hmm. And right across the street is the Trump Tower.
Nice.
So
nice.
We're in this prime location, and I've got three Connecticut artists there.
Oh, fantastic. Who do you have?
Margaret Rolicky.
Wonderful.
David Borowski. Mm-hmm. And Rita Valley.
Terrific.
In an exhibition called Fact Alternate.
Very nice. Very nice.
Open
so it'll be a mixture, I assume,
March.
Of sculpture and wall works?
Yeah, and a floor piece, mm-hmm. a gaffer's tape floor piece, and
okay.
video. And we'll be in the Finnish consulate offices, the former Finnish consulate offices. And that opens to the public March 6th from 11 to 7.
You are so busy.
Run through March 11th.
How are you getting your own work done? I realize that this is your own work, but, you know, your own artwork.
Yeah, I mean, this is an extension of who I am as mm-hmm. an artist. I'm kind of in my element here, but I actually have works going into a show in Long Island City mm-hmm. in the Standard Building, and that'll open March 5th in celebration of Women's History Month.
Fantastic.
So that's cool.
Wow, so much.
Yeah, it's a bit much right now. I don't mean to make it sound like I'm always this crazy.
Right. No, I imagine.
I'm not always this crazy. I'm looking for a little more slowdown, but that's going to wait until the end of April.
So when you're in the tunnel building, it's going to be, or you are there now, but are you still going to have features like you had a flat file, you had sort of smaller shows in the back at Odetta. Are you still going to do that, or is it just going to be streamlined to the four walls that you have?
It feels like there's going to be some flexibility in that floor with the gallery director and her staff. They seem open to me putting some programming and events in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we just needed, you know, to let them get this big project open. So you'll want to add your name to my mailing list on the Odetta site. I'll be sending info as we expand. Right now it's a little jewel of a box, three walls, 200 square mm-hmm. feet, but I envision flat files, I envision performance, I envision installations on a large, large scale in some of their more public areas. I envision artist talks and brown bag lunches. And,
great. Because that was one of the really nice things about the Bushwick space was that you had so many kinds of programming, and I certainly didn't catch all of them, but the ones that I did go to were really vibrant and lovely experiences.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I try to get people around the artwork more than once if I can swing it.
That's nice.
Right now for Bebop, they will be hosting hours and tours during Armory Week.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Armory Week in New York is coming up. It's basically March 6th through the 10th, but
okay.
Spring Break is March 6th through the 11th, and Hartford, the Yukon MFAs are March 1st through the 8th, and Bebop is ongoing right now. I do want to say hours at the terminal markets are weekdays, Monday through Friday, from 10 to 6.
Okay.
Unless you see me scheduling added events and hours, which I'm going to hopefully see happen
regularity. I have to say goodbye to you now, but it's been a delight to talk to you again. Thanks for coming on Live Culture, and I can't wait to see the new space. It's really, really pretty exciting.
Really great to reconnect with you, Martha.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, and send me a link to this program so I can post it this weekend.
I will. It will be available on the archives afterwards and forever as a podcast after that. Thanks, Ellen. Bye.
Bye.
So that was artist and curator Ellen Hackel-Fagan from Odetta Gallery. And after a break, we're going to hear a recorded interview that I took at the Eli Center for Contemporary Art about the forthcoming exhibit, Our Bodies, Ourselves.
You're like me when I'm sin quiet, but then I raise my voice, I'm too opinionated. Can't fucking stand when my chin was celebrated. I'm not trying to bring you down. host, Martha Willette Lewis, and I'm here at the former John Slade Eli House, which is now the Eli Center for Contemporary Art on Trumbull Street in New Haven. And we're getting ready for an exhibit called Our Bodies, Ourselves. And I'm here with a lovely group of people. I've got artist Nadine Nelson. I've got Mindy Englert, also an artist. Actually, everybody in here is an artist. Valerie Garlick, artist. And Debbie Hess, artist. And Debbie is normally the curator in this place, but you're nodding. but in this case, it's a much more collective project, which is why I've assembled such a large group of people to talk about the project. Let's start with a little bit about the background from it. I mean, Our Bodies, Ourselves is what?
Well, Our Bodies, Ourselves was a book that came out as part of the Boston Women's Health Collective in 1973.
Mm-hmm. I grew up with that book.
I have a memory of the book. I had it at college, and it's come out with a number of editions over the years until 2011, which is the last one that they are going to do in print. Mm-hmm. And it's just something I've been thinking about because I just keep thinking to myself that, boy, this was a long time ago, and we're still dealing with a lot of the same issues that were raised in this book, and it's still relevant, and there's got to be something interesting that we can do with this as a premise.
Well, and the book opened out so many issues of women's health. It was a little bit like The Joy of Sex. It was extremely important. I still think it's extremely important. So it's not just any old book. It's like the manual.
Bible.
Right, it's the manual. Yeah. Everybody here is nodding. So what are you all doing as part of this? Valerie, you're listed as one of the project organizers in addition to being an artist. And Mindy, you are too. Nadine, are you as well? No. Okay. No.
So this is Valerie speaking. Yes, I'm a feminist. I'm an artist, a curator, and a teacher, as mm-hmm. so many of us around the table are today. I'm reminded that just the other day at an organizers meeting, talking with Debbie, you were saying, I think your own daughter didn't want her hands on the book because all the information is readily available for her. And we had a good laugh that it wasn't always that way.
Yeah, it wasn't That's always true. That way. That book was so important because it wasn't right. always readily available.
So I think, in terms of different generations, younger generations take the information that's in this book for granted and don't even think there's a need for it mm-hmm. because they never had to fight for some of the things that we need to fight for that are so stated in this book.
Well, we might be fighting for them again because we're still battle in particular, right. but birth control, yeah, I think we are, in fact, having that battle still. It's just a little more underground, perhaps.
One of the things that will be on view are the covers of the various editions of the books in different languages. We have so many of them sent to us from the publisher. They're going to make a great mosaic on the wall.
Which is fantastic. There's one in particular that I remember from my childhood, and it's kind of iconic with the sort of handwritten marker-like lettering and the black and white photograph. So to backtrack a little bit, here at the Ely Center for Contemporary Art, I'm stumbling on that one, ECOCA. Yeah. It normally it's a very large space and there's group exhibits of contemporary art here. And every year at around this time for Women's History Month, you have an exhibit that's based on women's issues.
Right. It started out, we sort of gave it a name, In Grace We Trust, because Grace T. Eli was the woman that lived in this house. She lived here with her husband. He died shortly after that, and she was here for a good 50 years by herself and had lots of artists and arts organizations, social organizations, spend time here. And she passed away, and so in 1961 it was turned into an art center, which it's been in different forms ever since. And so I thought it was a good opportunity to sort of commemorate her for all the work that she did when it was called the John Slade Eli House, and create something around that for Women's History Month. And that's what we've done each year since.
And this, right, this is the third one?
It is.
Third one.
Yep.
So this will be a massive group exhibit that has several large pieces that are kind of linchpinning it, right? And it's an open call. You've got it. I'm putting this badly. You should tell me how you're organizing
okay.
it.
Okay. It is an open call. There are also a lot of artists that I've talked to that have very large-scale, ambitious, mostly interactive, participatory projects. Mm-hmm. One of them is by Megan Shaughnessy, and she is doing a project about her pregnancy that sort of deals with empathy and pregnancy, mm-hmm. and it's going to be a video interactive project. Nadine also, who's here with me now, mm-hmm. is going to be doing a really exciting project that's dealing with Sanctum Kitchen.
I want to get into detail on that, but I want to start with what the format of this is,
sure.
because people can still apply to mm-hmm. be in the exhibit, and it's an open call, and yet you have a large list of organizers.
We do.
So I wanted to talk both about how mm-hmm. one might apply, okay. what you're expecting to get, and what the organizers are doing.
Okay, so we're all organizing a lot of really interesting programs. We have panel discussions, talks, mm-hmm. performances. So we've all been working really hard on that, but we really want anyone who is interested in participating and being part of the show to get in touch with us. You can go right to the website, elacenter.org. You'll have all the information on that. The deadline to apply online is February 28th by 2 o'clock. So it's important that you do the online application, the submission process first before bringing your work over. And there are 4 different drop-off dates between February 24th and February 28th.
And I think we should mention that there is a fee.
There is a fee. It's $20, and there's lots of opportunities to volunteer mm-hmm. and live with that fee, including bringing something to eat or drink to the reception.
Oh, that's great. Okay. So
we
people
want
who feel like they can't.
To
yes.
participate in any way they can.
Mm-hmm. You want to, yeah. Nice. Nice. And Mindy, you're doing a project with your daughter.
Yeah.
So we're going to get large swaths of age groups.
Right.
Hopefully.
Well, I'm a high school teacher. I've been mm-hmm. teaching almost 20 years. I've been in New Haven a long time. And that's how I know Debbie from a long time ago at the Arts Council.
Mm-hmm.
So my daughter is 13. She just turned 13. And she's just entering puberty. And I'm just entering menopause. So I sort of tag team. And so we're doing an art project together for the show that are bookends. And we're going to have a book in the middle and then each make a bookend however we want and display that.
And will that be in this room, which, as I understand it, is going to be a kind of library with the zines?
Yeah, this
it
is...
could be.
Well, Allie Madison Quinlaw, she's doing zine work.
Okay.
Which are, if someone doesn't know, little magazines, kind
yes.
of cutting-edge, funky...
Right, inexpensively produced.
Small press.
Handmade.
You know, little radical magazines. And she came into my class, and also she came in and did a collaboration with ECA mm-hmm. students, and she did zines with all of us, and she's going to set up in the room we're in right now a zine library. Mm-hmm. And then also there's going to be a way that people can make zines right there. They're very easy and fun to make, and just the whole way, the thing about zines is it just encourages diversity of all kinds.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever's on your mind, you can make a
right.
zine about. So people can come, and there's going to be lots of interactive things at the show, and there's also going to be a variety of speakers, and
mm-hmm.
including a panel that we're going to have to open. We're going to have a really nice opening on March 10th. From 1 to 2 is this great panel with the Our Bodies Ourselves founders, Judy Norsidian
oh, wow.
and Paula Duress Waters.
Fantastic.
And, yeah, they're coming and they're going to, you know, be on a panel and talk
all done.
About what they were doing then, what's going on now, their thoughts. And then we have a few other people. Rachel Cavernaloff,
mm-hmm.
and she is, I guess she's in her late 20s. She's a really fabulous person that a lot of people around here know. She wrote this book in high school called My Little Red Book,
mm-hmm.
which became a New York Times bestseller, and it's all period stories, first period stories. And she also has been working on she also then did a book called The Feminist Utopia Project. She's going to be on the panel and talk with the founders about sort of where she feels she is, years
mm-hmm.
later, benefiting from what they had done.
Right, a younger woman's approach
exactly.
towards feminism, because a lot of younger women were busy saying that they weren't feminists until this past election, when all of a sudden it became important.
Some
still are saying they are not, but I would say that the women's movement has shifted.
And we have a couple other people, Vanessa Paranjothi, I think, mm-hmm. And she does work with menstrual cups and helping people... I think in other parts of the world to be able to go to school and work, you know, do what they need to do,
mm-hmm.
which is a major issue for people.
And you've been organizing
with everybody.
Yeah, okay,
I think we could say we're all
this
working
is just
together.
This is a massive yep. collective effort.
Yeah.
Okay,
we have a moderator that we're really excited about, Crystal Feimster, who is a professor at Yale. She's a historian and she's a professor of African American studies.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote a very influential book called Southern Horrors: Women in the Politics of Rape and Lynching. And she's really an expert on sexual violence during Civil War times and ongoingly. And she's going to moderate that.
That's great. So you'll have a deep historical aspect.
There's all sorts of things going on
right.
in that panel. That's just 1 hour. And then from 2 to 4, we're going to have music and an opening. And that's just the kickoff. And then we're going to have a variety of different people through the month giving talks and, you know, trying to engage all kinds of people. And it's really important to us.
people of all ages, all ethnicities, all gender spectrum, everyone should be welcome. So we're reaching out.
Just as a question I was wondering about, do you think a lot of men are, in particular, are scared of things like periods and things like pieces of artwork about periods or pregnancy? Do you think they're going to want to come?
Well, I personally think it can be very interesting and educational. And I mean, maybe Nadine will talk next about just conversations that can happen when you have something. There is going to be a piece with, you know, period blood. And so I think it's going to bring up lots of things for lots of different people. And then conversation can happen. And maybe that's a good segue into what Nadine's doing.
Yeah, it is. This is one of the things that I always wonder about with these shows, because they're very, very earnest and well-intentioned. But I feel like oftentimes everybody's talking to themselves. It turns into a little bit of an echo chamber because there's a deep-seated fear of a lot of these things. And it's hard to get people in to see.
It would be great if people who feel a little cringy about the topic would come.
Yeah.
Just like if you're a Republican and, you know, you should invite some Democrats, and you're a Democrat, you shouldn't invite.
Right, we should all be talking.
And if we're talking about this and people are like, what is that? You know, come and see for yourself and talk to some people, and maybe, you know, you can help us understand things better and we can help you. And just the kind of conversations that will come out of this is kind of why we're in it, I think.
Well, and also, art is fun. It does. You can have dark aspects to it. You can. It can be about very, very serious things. But visual objects and artists are really, you know, it's a dynamic and engaging. And we're in this beautiful old mansion, which has been an art center for quite a while now. And we're in the room that's the front room, which is the zine room, or it will be the zine room. But then next door to it, the big archway, is the room that Nadine Nelson, you're turning this into a kind of a kitchen, is that right?
Yeah, so my piece is called Kitchen Sanctum, and I do social engagement art.
Mm-hmm.
And so the room will be set up as a kitchen. One area will be like an apothecary where people can get teas, and there'll be something for them to plug in and boil water and sit down at a table and then engage in different type of activities. And so, like, you know, kitchen table talk, and the whole notion of like sipping tea and so sharing secrets, how the kitchen can bring us together, not only for nourishment, but to tell our secrets, to share recipes, potions, in the past have abortions, like all these different things. And so there'll be
an depending
altar
on what kind of tea it is.
Yes, exactly. But there'll be, you know, potions, like serious questions, like about, you know, obviously our bodies, ourselves, about like how you might look at your body, how you relate to your body in regard to food, but then other questions.
Which is a big issue for many, many women.
Right.
You know.
And then also like intersectionality and looking at feminism and how we might look at our bodies depending on what cultures we come from, you know, what age group. So there'll be a lot of opportunities for people to get to know each other and to engage, because I think that that's really important. And then also hopefully, you know, come with your child. You know, I'm also perimenopausal and my daughter is a pre-tween.
No.
And I'm like, please help me.
Yeah.
You know, please help me. So I want it to be also a place where people feel good about themselves. And so, like, being able to, like, do beauty regimens, you know, like, because, you know, you eat food, but then also it's great to be able to paint masks and all these kind of things. So it'll be a really fun, interactive environment that people can come and hang out and have some tea. I'll have like snacks that people can take with their tea. You know, we'll be making a soup from Korea that has to do with birth. And so after this, I'm going to talk to Debbie about my events that I want to have, but I would like to have one on, you know, croning, like so, like, you know, women as elders, but then also about different stages of development that we go through, women. And I think that also when we talk about pregnancy around the world, it's very different, you know?
Sure.
And it's,
well, women have different access to different kinds of, like,
right. But then also, like, how we look at, like, for some people, you know, in America, I feel like I thought that when I had a baby, for instance, that people, it would be a time where I have like a lot of aunts and all that kind of stuff. But then when you live in different places, I lived in Boston, they lived in New Haven.
Yeah.
You know, my mom came up for 2 days. You know, now my mom is retired, so she could go spend the whole week with my brother and his wife. And you know, in other cultures, you know, you're not left alone, you know. So
in other cultures, you might actually all live together. Yeah, so you might have grandmothers. And so I just want to interrupt for a second and say that you're listening to Live Culture. I'm your host, Martha Willette Lewis. I'm here today at the Eli Center for Contemporary Art, and I'm with Debbie Hess, Valerie Garlick, Mindy Englart, and Nadine Nelson, and we are talking about the forthcoming exhibit, Our Bodies, Ourselves, which opens what date?
It'll be open to the public March 7th, and the reception is Sunday, March 10th from 1 to 4, with 1 to 2, a panel discussion.
Great. And Nadine was talking about her project, which is a kind of kitchen-like environment, kitchen sanctum.
It's kitchen sanctum. So,
and, yeah.
It's going to be a really nice, inviting kind of area. So, like, there'll be an altar in one area. Mm-hmm. There'll be, like, herbs and other things in another area. There'll be, like, food that people can take and do something with in another area. So it'll be a very vibrant, living space.
Right. You're inviting them to sit around the table and spend time, which is nice because we're actually in a former domestic environment. This is a beautiful, grand old house, and I'm not really sure where the kitchen was.
Well, the kitchen is really right behind the room that
Nadine
will be using.
And your projects, on the whole, are food-based, or the things that I know you from are food-based.
Yeah, so they are food-based, and they all are experiential.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
but you won't be here the whole time.
No, I will not be here, but
but
there'll be questions, and that the room will be set up in a way that you can engage, and you can make your own tea,
mm-hmm.
and you can get a snack, you can sit down,
right,
and hopefully wash
dishes.
Invite
people to stay, wash dishes.
You can go to the next room, and you can make a zine.
Yeah.
I want beauty treatments. I want masks. So, how many artists do you think? I mean, you may not know the answer to this. This is a large open call show, but you've done three other in the past, or this is the third one. So you must have some sense of approximately how many people are going to be showing up. Will all the artwork fit in here? It's a big space, but
my philosophy is it always fits.
It always fits.
It's a really big house, and there's different parts of the house to use or not use. I think of it as like going to a yoga class, and if you get there before they close the door, there's always room, and
mm-hmm.
everyone moves the mats over, and it's never too crowded.
Right, and that seems to be your curatorial approach with this, too, because there's an awful lot of people involved, which is great, and lots of voices.
This is something for artists to know. You can submit up to 3 artworks.
Mm-hmm.
There's no size limit. And
it has to fit through the door.
There's no size limit?
Fit it through the door.
That's a dangerous...
I've never had a size limit on any show.
And throughout the course of the exhibit, which is March 7th to April 10th, there'll be walkthroughs with the artists in the show. So hopefully weekly we'll have an event where you can come as a viewer or as one of the artists,
mm-hmm.
and you can hack through each gallery space, which should be really fun. We're also doing programming in the realm of literature and music, too. And there's a great calendar on the website, elicenter.org, for this show. Which
that's great. I was going to ask about that, because there are so many events that I don't think we can
and
say
all of them.
And we're
still open to plugging some more events in.
Mm-hmm.
We still have space on the calendar, so get in touch, submit your art by the deadline, which is the 28th by 2 p.m., or tell us about your ideas for programs.
Mm-hmm.
Make it happen.
Right,
that's
so
fair.
Visual calendar, the website, is really a nice way to keep track of everything, and there's lots of opportunities to add to it.
So this venue has really been important to Live Culture. Our very first show was about the possibility of it closing down when it was the John Slade Ely House. And then several episodes later, we talked to Jeannie Criscola, mm-hmm. and a friend of hers who was a lawyer working on this. There was a group of artists who went to court about some of this. And now it's been kind of resolved, and Jeannie is
the head of the board.
Head of the board. And Debbie, you've been in charge more or less of curating
things.
I'm on
the board, but I've taken on the role as a curator, gallery director.
Mm-hmm.
We have one person that's hired part-time, and the gallery's open to be here.
And it's been going great gangbusters, basically. It's, you know, there's an active roster of exhibits. There's a beautiful show up right now, which is presumably going to be taken down rather quickly, and another one will go up. So the place really seems to be thriving. How long will this go on for? I know it was meant to be a temporary project.
Right. I don't have the answer to that. I mean,
ACES is what?
ACES is the owns the building.
No, but lots of people may not know.
Oh, what ACES is. Oh, sorry. ACES is a statewide initiative for special ed, and they run ECA, which is the Educational Center for the Arts, which is down the block, and will probably expand into the space as
which is a high school for the arts.
Right, yeah.
And so the high school for the arts will be taking over the building at some unknown point in the future.
Right.
And until that happens, artists can enjoy this space, which really is a treat because it's so beautiful.
It's a gorgeous space. It's really beautiful. And we can do so many different types of shows here. We can do large shows with one concept or lots of different shows throughout the house.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
And the shows are free and open to the public.
Free and open to the public, yep. And always opportunities to get involved for artists or anybody who wants to be involved here.
Are the events all free?
Yep. Sometimes we do have workshops that are clear if there's a small fee so that we can pay an artist to run a workshop. But a lot of them are free to the public to come to.
That's great. And you've extended the deadline for people to enter until the 28th. How much are you expecting people to know about the book? Do you believe that the works of art will be primarily rooted in the book in some way? Or is it just going to be a mixed bag?
I think the title itself is, you know, going to make people curious to find out more. And we do have a description on the website about the book as more a jumping off point.
Right.
So I think it'll be a mix.
I think young people today do not know anything about the book.
I don't think they do either.
That's ever heard of it.
Right. That's kind of what I was leading to.
Yeah.
I'm pretty
and
sure
I think
there's.
I think everything is on the internet, and everyone is more informed. And there's so many shows.
Or misinformed. There's so much misinformation on the internet.
You know, they go to the internet or they go to shows that they watch with so much explicit information and stuff. But they don't really have necessarily a source like we did. Like, I also was like 13 when I got that book. You know, my mom gave me that book and had a great talk with me, and I was really lucky. A lot of my friends didn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
My mom was a nurse, and her mom told her everything, and she told me everything, and she's like, I'll tell your friends if it's okay with their parents.
Wow.
My mom was really like...
That's fantastic. Yeah.
She was really amazing like that. And that book was so important to me.
Really?
And,
me too.
I had that book in my room. And, you know, kids, I don't know, they have everything available, but this is always an issue for young people today. Like, with everything available, what is actually legitimate? What sources should you be using? And I don't know if they have that kind of wisdom, you know, they don't really have sources necessarily, like, to help them navigate.
Well, I think the internet is full of pernicious and dangerous information for women that, you know, there's the pornographication of everything, and a lot of the messages for women are just horrendous on the internet, and there's so much bad information well-intentioned bad information, but, you know.
If you put in a search for something like, oh my God, what are you doing? So, I don't know, that's a challenge of today. There's so many challenges for young people today.
Yeah, if I had daughters, I would worry a little bit about that. I would rather give them a copy of Our Bodies Ourselves.
I guess to have it legitimate, it would have to be handed out in a school setting or a library setting for them to know that this is something important.
Which, that's a taboo topic still in schools, sex ed.
Right,
so,
right.
You still have that as if it's taught and how it's taught and who teaches it. I know my daughter was in a program here in New Haven, New Haven has an abstinence-based sex ed program. She just had sex ed. And
what does that mean?
Well, yeah, look into it, I did.
They suggest abstinence as the safest way of proceeding?
You know, I don't feel like I'm qualified to talk about that program. That is the program.
That's fine.
Look into it online as I did. It comes from a certain set of sources, and, you know, check that out in free time.
Mm-hmm. I will. I'll be looking into it. Okay, so as artists, you're both. Who is going to be putting this together? And tell me a little bit more about some of the bigger projects, because we heard about Nadine's, and we heard a little bit about yours.
Well, most of the larger projects, the artists will be installing them, putting them together themselves, and sort of figured out together where is an appropriate spot for their work. And because it's a house with different personalities in each room, it really does make a difference where these pieces are. And then the rest of the art that comes in tend to be more kind of smaller sculptures and paintings, and they will kind of find their place in the conversation.
And will the artist be hanging them up as they...
No. No.
Somebody will be arranging them.
We have drop-off points, and we have a crew of people.
Good.
And we will make those decisions together, and we have a group of people that want to help physically install, and I think we're in great shape.
And I think part of that is to do some are sound pieces and some are not, and we know the space well enough. We need some space for the performances that will happen throughout the month, so we're doing the planning and placement of the works to take it off the hands of the artist.
Right, because it really is this huge juggernaut. I don't think I've quite emphasized that enough. I think people should really look on the website, and there's going to be more things coming, and it will be a lot of fun. I think that, you know, I think I made it sound a little too scary before, and I don't think I should have done that because there's so much. There's going to be music and dance and
Do you know the
panel
year the
talks.
House was built?
I think around 1908, around that time.
So it's a delicate historic building.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's the other thing about people banging into the walls and
so forth.
Yeah.
It's not a do-it-yourself kind of environment.
I think it will be fun. I think that was something we were talking about just before, where Debbie's so inclusive and she's so warm, and she just, and the way that she runs things is just whoever wants to participate, whatever works, she's going to figure it out. And we were kind of talking about that just being sort of a woman's way, you know, like a, not to be sexist, but there is no hierarchy and there's not a lot of rules, you know, it's just inclusive warmth.
And that we trust our intuitions too, and that is sort of a...
Yeah, and that the more the better, and like the more diversity, the more different things, like let's all figure it out together, and that'll just make it richer and more fun, and really more of a statement, you know, on what's going on today, which is, it all comes back to our bodies, ourselves today, and this is what it looks like when people just all can come, all are invited, no one's shunned, and let's see how it all comes together, and what kind of conversations will happen once things are put together.
I had this conversation earlier this morning with Allie, Madison Quinlog, who's organizing the zine library in the room that we're sitting in right now, and we were just talking about when you organize or curate things, you are organizing a process and you allow it to unfold rather than creating a product.
I'm owning
that process now. That's, I guess,
yeah, but it also turns the whole art exhibit in some ways into its own work of art as well, which is nice. It's a living thing.
I feel like this is going to be definitely a living, breathing kind of experience for people that are in it and people that come to experience the show, because at least half of the projects that I know of are somewhat interactive and very inviting and engaging.
Fantastic. So on that note, I would like to thank you all for being here on Live Culture. I want you to just give us the website again and the details for how people can submit their work.
Okay, so it's www.elycenter.org, and we have it up on the main screen with all the details and a link to apply to the show. You can apply up until February 28th by 2 o'clock online first. There's not really a way once you come here to do the paperwork. So we're asking that you do the paperwork online before the drop-off dates. There's four different drop-off dates between the 24th and the 28th. Bring your work over.
Okay, well,
thank you.
Nadine, Mindy, Valerie, and Debbie, thank you very much for being on Live Culture.
Thank you so much for having us.